But that one, you turned it, and it was basically the same.
That's right. Yeah, that's another way to say it. That's right.
I don't want to see if this
is going to. The other one was just a bunch of pentagons.
Very cool, you guys. Okay. So that's a beautiful
one.
No, leave this.
Okay.
No, we make it.
Can I see that? So that's classified, and I'm going to hide it, but you'll get to show it off at the end of class. Okay, so can I ask everybody to sit down now? Can I ask everybody to sit down now, and we're gonna discuss. Can everybody see that? No, you can't see that. Oh, that's okay. Okay, so I want to take a poll. Oh, another classified one. Okay, I'm going to have to hide that. You can show it off at the end. This is beautiful. Thank you, guys. Nice. Thank you. Cool. Okay, so the question that I want to ask you guys is, are there other symmetric shapes? So we found the tetrahedron, and that was symmetric. We found the cube. We found the octahedron. A couple of you found a classified shape that you weren't supposed to find, and so those are hidden. But besides those ones, besides these ones and the hidden ones, do you think we can keep going like this? Can we just keep getting more and more intricate shapes? Why not, right? Yeah, we should just keep getting more and more complicated things, and as long as we obey our symmetric rules, maybe we can just keep going on and on forever. So what I want to talk about is, how can we start to think about what possible shapes there are? How can we think about how we might start building them on and on forever? So the conjecture from a lot of the audience is, yes, we can keep doing this. We can keep going. Okay, so I want to try to test that conjecture. So if we can keep going, then we should just come up with a way to do it. So let's give it a try. So first of all, let me ask. So okay, all faces should have the same shape. So all of these faces, in fact, had either triangles or squares. Okay, so if we want to keep going, a question that I want to ask you guys is, can we have any shape for a face? Another question I want you to think about is how many faces? How many faces can come together in a vertex? Okay, how many faces can come together in a vertex? That's the same thing as how many edges leave the vertex, right? Because the number of faces, like here there's three faces, there's also three edges. So can we have maybe five edges coming together, or six or seven? So that's one question. So let's start on the second question here. Can I have a vertex in my symmetric polygon, my symmetric tetrahedron, symmetric polyhedron, can I have one where only two faces come together at a vertex? I'm seeing some people shaking their heads. Anybody want to say yes? Okay, I saw some precocious people shaking their heads no. So what would be the problem with two faces coming together at a vertex? So maybe, what would be the problem with me saying, well, here's my two triangles, and I want only those two triangles to come together, only these two triangles to come together at that face. What's the problem with doing that? Why can't I do that? Maybe if I do it this way. So there's two triangles coming together. I see, yeah, you have some ideas why this is a bad idea?
You have to have 180 degrees.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Yeah, there's definitely a bound on the angles that I can allow. So if I take just these two faces, and I try to close this up, what's going to happen, given what you said? What's going to happen if I just take two faces and I try to close this up? Yeah, that's right. Since the faces aren't curved, if I just have two faces coming together at a vertex and there's not a bar here to stop them, then they're just going to keep coming together and it's going to flatten out and it's not going to be a polyhedron anymore. It's going to be flat, right? So we got to have at least two faces together. Now, if I just had one face, well, that's not really a polyhedron. That's just a two-dimensional, that's just a triangle. So one face is no good and two faces is no good. So we need to have at least two faces. Okay, so let's stick to the case of triangles for a second. Can I have 20 equilateral triangles coming together to a single face? Here I've got two, and now I'm about to make three. Can I do four? So here's three together. So could this be what a vertex looks like in an equilateral, in a regular polyhedron, symmetric polyhedron? It could, sure. In fact, if I glue these together and I have three of them, well, an example is the tetrahedron. So the tetrahedron had three faces coming together into a vertex. How about four? Could I have four triangular faces coming together into a vertex? You say yes, and I agree with you, because in fact we already found that, right? We found that the octahedron has four triangular faces coming together. Okay, so now let me ask you, could we have not four, but could we have five triangles coming together into a face? Does this look like this something that we could then patch this up and make something interesting out of it? Yeah, and some of you guys who have classified information saw something like this. Okay, good. So five is okay. So two is no good, three is good, four is good, and five is good. These are all for triangles. Okay, what about six? Can I have six faces coming together? Very good, okay. So what happens if I have six faces coming together? Well, I can do that. Okay, here I did it. So, what's your name, dear?
Anna.
So precisely as Anna said, I can do this, I can make this, but you see what happens is it's flat. Now, remember one of our conditions for being a symmetric polyhedron is that we wanted every vertex to have the same number of edges. So maybe I'm not so worried about this one being flat, but now if this one has the same number of vertices, six, then it's going to have to be flat. And then this one is going to have to be flat, and this one is going to have to be flat, and this thing is never going to close up. Right? I think that's what Anna's saying. If it's flat, how could it possibly ever close up? It's just going to go on and on forever. So this is something that we could draw on the chalkboard, and it would look really pretty, but it would never close up into a shape. Okay, so if six doesn't work, is seven going to work? Seven I get even more uncomfortable with, because seven now there's just not enough room for all of these things to live in there together, you see? There's just not even enough room for this to be a nice convex corner. So secretly in our definition, we're going to need to ask that the thing close up. And if you've got seven together, it's just going to get all jumbled and it's never going to be able to close up. So in fact, if we use triangles, then we can only have three, four, or five faces. Does that make sense? Okay. So now what about if we use squares? Does anybody have those X-shaped tiles? So by the way, were you guys able to get any new symmetric shapes out of squares? No. Okay. So these guys had, let me show you their tiles because some of you haven't seen them. Thank you. So So these guys had these square-shaped tiles. So instead of having edges like we had with the triangles, these ones here are really more like the faces. So let me just show you what the cube looks like with these tiles. Okay, so here's what the cube looks like with these tiles. So the thing I want to draw your attention to is that before we were filling in the bars, which were the edges, and now I'm just filling in the faces, but it's the same difference. So this little gap here is really an edge between these two vertices. Okay, so this is what the cube looks like. So now let me ask you a question. Can we have, if we have squares, can we have two squares coming together to a vertex? No, right? Same problem as before. It would get flat, right? So we can't have two squares. Can we have three squares coming together to a vertex? I'm hearing a yes from over here. Why yes? The cube, yeah. Yeah, great. The cube is an example. So the cube, this vertex has three faces that come together to meet it. And so the cube, certainly we can. What about four? Can we have four squares coming together to a face? I'm hearing a no. Do I hear any yeses? Can we do four squares coming together to a face?
Same problem with the triangle.
So let's see what happens if we put four squares together. Four squares together to a face. We're going to run into some trouble here. And as Anna says, we're going to run into the same trouble that we ran into with six triangles. As soon as you put four squares to a vertex, that vertex had better be flat. See, and then if we keep going and keep going, it's going to be flat all the way down. So it turns out for squares, we can only have three squares to a vertex. Okay, what about pentagons? We didn't see any examples of pentagons. Do we think it's even possible to have pentagons for faces? Nobody was able to come up with any. Oh, somebody made one and it fell apart? Yep. Okay, good. Okay, so we think it may be possible to have pentagons as faces. So since we think it's possible, here's how I'm going to think of a pentagon. Okay, so I'm going to make my pentagons in a kind of a funny way. I'm going to the pentagon is just this one here. This was one of the first shapes that we had, and the only reason that I put in these extra rods here is just for structural support, right? You guys who made one of these before, if you don't put these in, it just all falls apart. But you were still able to do it. You just weren't able to hold it. So just so that I can hold something and not have it fall apart, I'm going to put this extra ball and this extra rod in here. But I want you to pretend those aren't there. The only balls are these balls on the outside and the rods on the outside. Okay, so now let me ask you a question. How many pentagons do we think could come together into a given vertex? We got a guess here? Okay, so we already ruled out two. We already ruled out two pentagons. Now three worked for a square, and the angles in a pentagon are just a little bit bigger, but you think maybe it's still going to work?
Yeah.
You still think we can still do it with three? Okay, how about four? Do we think that it's going to work with four? Well, why not? Why not with four? What's that? Yeah, I mean, if there wasn't enough room for the squares, and this one is bigger, then we're not going to get anywhere with that. Okay, so this is really great, you guys. Now we know what we can expect each individual vertex to look like. And for a while there, it seemed like we were going to get infinitely many of these shapes. And it seems like maybe we still can, but we found all these sort of surprising restrictions on what sorts of things we could do at each vertex. So now, what I want to do is, what I want to explore now is, if we have, say, triangles, and we put three triangles to a vertex, three equilateral triangles to a vertex. Are there more than one way that we could do that? That's a question I want to ask. So if all we're asking is that every vertex have three triangles coming out of it, then there seems like there could still be some room for us to find some interesting things. So maybe what I'll do is I'll just start that vertex there. I'll just start that vertex there as having three triangles coming into it. Okay, but where my thumb is, there's not a face there. I'm not asking there to be a face. Okay? And maybe what we could do is maybe we could start like that, and then we could build some other shape where, since that's not a face, we get to keep building more. And then maybe we could make all the other vertices have just three faces coming into a vertex. And then we could try to see if we could play this game to get some new shapes. Is that okay? So what we ruled out is we said there's only these five possibilities at each vertex. But that's not the same as saying that that there's only five possibilities altogether, because maybe we can build these little vertices, we can glue them together in some new way that we haven't discovered. So for instance with the cube, so I kind of tied these guys' hands because I didn't give them rods, I just gave them the square-shaped faces, and I challenged them to build a symmetric shape out of squares, and so they were only allowed to use three faces to a vertex, and you guys came up with some new examples, right? No, they didn't come up with new examples, okay. All right. Well, maybe they didn't try hard enough, or maybe there just are no new examples. It's hard to say. So we're going to have to do some thinking to figure this out. So let's see. I think what I'd like to do right now is I'd like to again unleash you guys on these balls and rods, and I want you to try and come up with. Let's see. Let's try and come up with this one here. So I want five triangles to come together to each vertex, and I want you to glue those together and see what you can come up with. All right? So we take a break at 11, is that right?
Yeah, about around then, yeah.
Okay. So from now until the break, we'll work on that. And then we'll have a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll figure out, you guys, what I want you to do is I want you to come back to this question, are there others? And so what I want you to do, now we have a systematic way, we know what each vertex has to look at, I want you to just try to build us some other ones, okay? So if you didn't get to play earlier, that's because you weren't fast enough, so get down here, grab some balls and rods, and let's try to make some stuff. Hi. Oh, that's beautiful. Let me see that. Yeah, I've still got it tucked away. I've still got it tucked away, but we'll.
Is it still classified?
Still classified. Yeah, that's what they're working on now. So you guys can just take a breather. Well, you know what you guys should do?
We don't have any bars.
You should try to think about this question: are there others?
So we don't have any bars.
You don't have any rods?
No.
No, we have a lot of balls, but no rods.
Okay. Well. Let's go find some people with rods. Go find some people that look like they don't have anything to play with, and just sit near them and help them out. So, oh, you wanted to show me this one. Oh, this is cool.
My brother and I made it.
Oh, I like this one. Can we save this one? So, oh, and you can lengthen these?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't even know that you could do that. I just got these this morning. I like this one a lot. So, I like this one because it is symmetric. But let's look at this. Let's look over here. So I like this one a lot because what you did is you built this one, but you made, but you stretched it out extra long. And in the second hour, we're going to talk about what happens if you start with something symmetric like this and you start stretching it out. So this is really neat because. What we're going to be able to do is look at this shape, which is more symmetric than this one, and we're going to see what happens if you start stretching it. How does the symmetry change? So this is a great one. Let me Let me point something out. Let me draw this down here. Let me draw this one here, because this illustrates something that's going to be really important in the second hour. Now, since this one is has the same number of things here, so this is going to have still 6, 12, and 8, and we're going to say it's not symmetric anymore because you stretched it. Can I hold on to this one? Because this is going to, I'm going to use this to demonstrate something in the second hour. Is that okay? Thanks.
Okay, you said that all the faces should have the same shape?
For symmetric,
right.
Yeah.
Okay, so think of a soccer ball. You have hexagons and pentagons in there, but the sphere itself is still symmetrical.
That's right.
So isn't that voiding that rule?
You're right. So soccer ball is interesting. A soccer ball, so here we required that all the that they all have the same shape. A soccer ball is a loosening of this rule, right? Where, as you said, where you allow pentagons and hexagons. And if you start opening the door to things like that, you can get very, very interesting ones. So another example is if you can, and you can try this with your square-shaped ones if you want. You can do one with just squares and equilateral triangles, and you can get something which is kind of a similar idea to a soccer ball, yeah. So once you start doing that, you do get new examples that are not symmetric, not completely symmetric like this, but are very beautiful and interesting to study. So once you see the answer, so we're going to get a complete description of all the symmetric ones in this definition, then you can start to ask, what if I loosen, say, one, as you suggested? And we're going to see that the answer is different, but you can approach it in the same way. Okay. So that's a really neat question.
So is a soccer ball symmetrical?
A soccer ball is symmetrical. A soccer ball is... it's not symmetrical in this definition just because of the way you set it up. That's right. But it has what's called... There's a more interesting notion of symmetry for which it's very symmetric. So we're going to talk in the second hour, I hope, about something called symmetry groups. And so you know, we said that everything had to be completely symmetric for our definition. But, like, if we look at this one, it's still kind of symmetric. Yeah, it's not completely symmetric, but you can still... say switch this one and this one, or you can still rotate this one. And so there's something called a symmetry group, which is all the things you can do to a given one to get back where you started with. And the thing that's interesting about the soccer ball and the tessellation with pentagons and hexagons is not completely symmetric, because you can't, of course, map a hexagon onto a pentagon, but it still has a very large symmetry group. It's very interesting to study that.
Yeah? Well, isn't it also partly symmetrical because the pentagons are curved?
Yeah, the curving helps, although with a soccer ball, you wouldn't want to play soccer with it, but you could imagine on a soccer ball turning those curved edges into facets. But you're right, the curvature makes it... So if you think of it, if you don't think about the tiles and you just think of it as a ball, then that becomes very interesting, because it doesn't just have... Like here, the symmetries are kind of like clicks. You can click it. But just a ball instead of a soccer ball, it has a whole family of symmetries, right? You can take it and start rotating in all different directions, and that's very, very interesting to study. That's actually ends up being much more advanced than what we're doing today. Mm-hmm.
Isn't the answer the icosahedron?
There's one more missing, which is icosahedron, that's right.
And
a dodecahedron, that's right, yeah. But see, everybody guessed that there would be infinitely many, that we can keep going, but it turns out there's only those two, and so we're going to see why that is.
Yeah. Right, that's what I thought. I'm like, I don't want to move in the little building party.
Yeah, yeah, I'm glad that you kept the classified information classified. Thanks.
This trick here.
Oh yeah, good. That's like this one, I think. Octahedron.
Oh, yeah.
Very good.
So is it symmetrical?
Yeah, it is symmetrical. It's funny the way that one draws it. It doesn't seem so symmetrical because we think about this square here, and so it seems like it has a top and a bottom. But in fact, you're right. It is symmetrical because if we turn our head on the side, then instead of thinking of this square being our square that we glued them on, if we turn our heads to the side, we see that we could have used this square. There's another square, and now this is the top and this is the bottom. So in fact, there's three different squares, and those squares are all symmetric within there. So it is symmetric, and the way that we can see that just from the definition is all the faces should have the same shape, and that's true, because the square in the middle doesn't count. That's not really a face, right?
I also noticed that if you draw like axes, that, and then connect all the tips, then you get
Oh, nice. That's cool, yeah. Oh, I like that. Yeah, so that way that you built it symmetrically. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very good. Yeah, that's right. This is just the coordinate axes in three dimensions, and then you just connected them. Yeah, very nice. Thank you.
Asking the question of the solutions you were trying to come up with, and why it's not gone. So the five triangles on one side of an octahedron, what is in that order?
Oh, okay. Well, what you're hitting on is something interesting, yeah. So, I mean, the definition that we wanted is that all faces have the same shape and they be equilateral. So this is just our working definition, because so what you did is you took an equilateral triangle and you broke it up into triangles that were no longer equilateral. So technically it doesn't meet this definition of symmetric. But this process, we're going to see, I hope to see in the second hour, that this process of realizing that you can take a triangle and break it into smaller triangles, it turns out that the key things that we're going to compute don't depend on breaking it up. So it's actually really useful to be able to break up.
Anything like that snowflake thing where you take a triangle and put more triangles on it, and
this is this Cook snowflake. Yeah, so this is a fractal. This is very beautiful. And it's also, it has an infinite symmetry group. So the same way that these ones have...
In 2D, though.
Yeah, in two dimensions, yeah.
Yeah, he's talking 3D.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So you have to...
That's very beautiful, yeah. And you could probably do some things, like, to make this into a three-dimensional shape.
Oh, what if you...
Ah, Legend of Zelda. Yeah, I know that one. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. This is called... So I'll just tell you a technical word for this. This is called barycentric subdivision. So that's a very technical, silly word for taking an equilateral triangle and breaking it up into four smaller equilateral triangles. And this, it turns out, is something that you do a lot in applications of these shapes. So why would we do this? I mean, it's fun. It's fun to look at all these shapes. But one thing that I would point out is that, so this guy here, so have you ever heard of something called methane?
Yeah.
Methane? So this is the stuff in swamps that stinks. Yeah, okay, very good. Okay, very good. So the thing about this drawing here is this shows you the two-dimensional shape. But in fact, of course, methane is a molecule, so it lives in three dimensions. And what happens is that the carbon atom lives right in the middle, and the four hydrogen atoms live right on the outside. And something that's really beautiful is that physics likes to be symmetric. So it turns out that these shapes that have lots of symmetries, they also have really low energy. So in physics, there's an idea that physics is lazy, and things always want to be in the lowest energy state. It also turns out that the lowest energy state almost always has some extra symmetries. So in particular, the state that methane wants to be in is exactly a tetrahedron. And so now you could ask a question, does a cube arise? And does, for instance, salt crystals. If you look at salt crystals, they form into... long rods, which are just built out of cubes, repeated over and over again. And so it's useful. So this idea of breaking triangles into smaller pieces, you can imagine how that would be useful if you're studying a crystal or a long chain of methane. Polymers, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks.
Those are neat.
We're going to find that out. We're going to find that out not by building it. We're going to find it out by computing it. It's going to be great. I don't know off the top of my head.
Have you ever seen the Zome tools?
No.
They
like this?
The math, the geometry tool.
Uh-huh.
That they're plastic. They're not magnetic, but the little balls are covered with tiny holes. So you can put them.
Oh, I see. I see. And then they're more rigid. They won't be floppy. Okay, everybody. So we got to get back to work now. As a teaser, I want to show you something very beautiful that one of the groups came up with. So this is a very beautiful shape. It is, on the face of it, it is not a symmetric shape in the way that we talked about, because on the face of it, this vertex on the outside has 3 edges coming off of it, and this one on the inside has 10. So on the face of it, it's not going to fall into our classification, but it's even better because if you look inside it, we're going to see 2 shapes that we haven't yet found. And they're going to correspond to 2 of the possibilities that we guessed at but we haven't discovered. So a few other groups found this too, and I want to make sure to give them credit. So we haven't yet found a shape that has 5 triangles at every vertex, and we haven't yet found a shape that has a pentagon in every vertex. But what I want to show you is that now we have. So if you look at this beautiful thing that they built here, the thing I want to show you, I think I have another one. So this is another group came up with this one. So this is what you get if you... This is one example of a nice symmetric shape where you have 5 triangles at every vertex. Okay, and this is completely symmetric in our definition of being completely symmetric. And if you look, if you stare at this beautiful thing that they made inside there, providing structure on the inside is one of these guys. And then what they did, the clever thing that they thought to do, is they thought to... take each of these triangles and just glue on a tetrahedron right there. And then when they did that, that's precisely how they got this beautiful shape here. So, as I said, on the face of it, it's not symmetric in our limited definition. But this points out something really obvious, right? Is we should start changing our definition if we're doing this next week and try to see how much more of these we can come up with. But in fact, this even has this one here with pentagons, which is called the dodecahedron. It has it if you ignore those inside ones. So if we ignore those inside vertices, see here we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 vertices. They're not connected with an edge because they ran out of bars, but we could imagine that there was an edge here, 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 and here. And if we do that, what we get is just a pentagon here. And then, in fact, all they did is they reinforced it in the same way that I did when I showed you my pentagon, just so that the thing wouldn't fall apart. So, in fact, there's a pentagon here, a pentagon here, a pentagon here. And this is another example of a shape that has 3 pentagons coming together at every vertex. You see, here's a pentagon, and this vertex is attached to this pentagon, and this pentagon, and no others. Okay. This also exhibits something really neat, which you can read about on Wikipedia, which is called Poincaré duality. So, you see, the icosahedron, which has 5 triangles at every vertex, and the dodecahedron, which has 3 pentagons at every vertex. So we have 3 fivegons. That's the dodeca. And the icosahedron has 5 threegons. So threegon is a funny name for a triangle. And see, what they did is just switch the 3 with the 3 and the 5 with the 5. And the way that they did that is they just built a pentagon at the center of every vertex of the icosahedron. And so this is called Poincaré duality. I wasn't even planning to talk about this, but since they made this beautiful demonstration of it, this is called Poincaré duality. And the way that you can exhibit this for yourself is you can build one of these shapes, any one of these ones that we've talked about, and then you can try to do the same thing where you glue on extra shapes outside of it. And what you're going to find is that there's a swap. So the dodeca and the icosahedron are really the same thing under this Poincaré duality. The cube and the octahedron are really the same thing under this Poincaré duality. And then amazingly, the tetrahedron, if you do Poincaré duality on the tetrahedron, you get back to the tetrahedron again. So that's a really neat exercise to work out, and you can just do it on pen and paper, just drawing it. So I wanted to share this before we got back to work. Okay, so the thing is that I asked this question, can we keep going? Are there infinitely many of these symmetric shapes? And the overwhelming answer was yes. And then we saw that there were these constraints on how many triangle squares and pentagons we could have. And it sure seems like we're not able to do two different shapes with the same with all triangles, or two different shapes with all with four triangles at each vertex. It seems like there's kind of only one. And so I want to explain. I want to think about actually proving that there is only one way to do each of these configurations. So we're going to prove that, in fact, we've listed all of them. In fact, we're going to prove that we found all of them. So at first, we started this venture thinking that we were going to find infinitely many of these shapes. It turns out there's only these five, and that's really beautiful to talk about. I want to say I'm not really worried too much about applications, but I want to say that this sort of game that we're playing is not just a mathematical game for fun. It's actually relevant for a lot of systems in physics. So this extreme symmetry that we have on all these shapes, there's a sort of general theory that that physical systems, they want to live in, they want to conserve energy. They want to be in the laziest possible situation that they can. This is why if my chalk is up here, it wants to fall down, because there's less energy if it's on the ground than if it's up here, and it moves itself to the ground. It turns out that when molecules do this, when molecules arrange themselves, they arrange themselves in the lowest energy state, which happens to be very, very symmetric. So I wanted to share an example. Who was that that brought this example to my attention? What was your name again? An example that Ben brought to my attention. So methane, the molecule methane, its chemical symbol is CH4, which means that it has one carbon atom, which is very large, and it has four hydrogen atoms, which are smaller. So the carbon is, I think, approximately 12 times as big as the hydrogen atom. And the symbol that you usually draw in an organic chemistry class is this. So you have a C, and then you have the four hydrogens arranged around it. This picture is a little bit misleading, because molecules don't live in two dimensions. They live in three dimensions, like we do. We don't live in the chalkboard. We live in three dimensions, and so do our molecules. And the fact is that if you look at the three-dimensional shape of a methane molecule, the fact is that what you'll find is a carbon atom in the very center, and the four hydrogen atoms, they all have to share the space. They all repel one another, and they're all attracted to the carbon atom. So if you think about what that would look like, they all want to be as close to the center as they can, but they all want to be as far apart from one another as they can. And it turns out that the best way for them to do that is to be precisely in this very symmetric shape. So what we're doing is just some fun math, but it actually does have applications of physics. Salt crystals, which are sodium chloride, salt crystals form into crystals, which are built out of these cubes. So if you have some molecule that you're interested in studying and you want to know, is it likely to form a crystal, you can ask, what would one piece look like? And essentially one little piece of salt is just a little cube like this. And And since the cube is so symmetric, it's very natural for it to grow and form large crystals. So this is some mention of some chemistry that Ben brought up that's very interesting. So without further ado, I want to start talking about thinking about why it could be that there could only be one solution to each of these possibilities. Why there's only one. And so, as motivation, what I want to do is I want to look at our counts that we did. So we counted vertices, edges, and faces. And you see, if we know that our shape is symmetric, then counting vertices, edges, and faces all together like this was a very inefficient way to do it. So I want to talk about how can you count the vertices if you just know the edges, say, or how can you count the faces if you just know the vertices? So I want to look at some equations that relate these two things. So let's look at the tetrahedron. I'm going to tell you how many edges the tetrahedron has without ever pointing to an edge. I'm just going to point to the vertices, and you tell me if you like what I did. Okay, so I'm going to say, well, this vertex is connected to three edges. This vertex is connected to three edges. This vertex is connected to three edges. And this vertex is connected to three edges. Well, since each vertex is connected to three edges, that means 3 plus 3 plus 3 plus 3 is 12. So we saw, without actually having to count them, that there are 12 edges on a tetrahedron, right? Why are you shaking your head? Did I mess up? So, well, what was wrong with my logic? There's three edges to each vertex, and so this one has three, this one has three, this one has three, and this one has three. So I think that the number of edges is just equal to three times the number of vertices. What's wrong with that? Okay, very good. So, in fact, every edge shares two vertices, right? So when I did my count, I made a mistake here, and I said this one has three and this one has three, but that means that this one got counted twice. But if you think about it, that's the only mistake I made, right? Each edge got counted twice, but it didn't get counted three times because each edge is only connected to two vertices. So the equation I wrote, E equals 3V, is not quite right. It's 2E equals 3V because we counted each edge twice. So for instance, let's see here. 2 times E is 12, which is 3 times V, which is 12. Did I mess something up? This one's not regular, so it doesn't count. Tricked me there. This one, 2 times E is 24, which is 3 times 8. 2 times 12... What did I do wrong here? Vertices. Ah, right. Thank you. So this one doesn't have three edges coming out of each vertex. It has four. So this equation that we wrote is right when our faces are triangles. So let's assume that we have triangle faces. And then the equation that we found is that 2 times the number of edges equals 3 times the number of vertices. Okay, so I heard somebody point out that if there are squares, so that was when we had so what is this 2 had to do with the fact that we had two vertices attached to each edge. What did this 3 have to do with? Did it have to do with the fact that we were using a triangle? Yeah. Very good. Very good. Our trick worked here, even though we had squares. So it's not the number of sides, but rather the number of faces that were coming in. For both the tetrahedron and the square, even though they have different shapes, the number of edges coming out was the same. So I shouldn't be talking about triangular faces. I should be talking about, let's do a triangle faces with three triangles coming into a face. And then the equation I wrote is correct, right? What if we had triangle faces with four edges coming in, then what would our equation be? Very good. 2E is equal to 4V. Okay, what if we had squares, well, with squares, there's only one possibility already, which is 3, and then what would we have? Oh, very good. So this is 2e equals 4v, and you're absolutely right. We could simplify this. We can divide the 2 out, and we can write this as e equals to 2v. That's a good observation. We'll use that later. So what about if we have squares with three coming into each vertex? Then what do we end up with? 2 equals 3v again. That's right. Okay, we got a couple more to get through here. What if we have triangles, but we have 5 edges coming in? Very good. Okay, so you guys are seeing the pattern. In this equation that I'm writing down, of course, all that matters, it's always a 2 here, and then this number is precisely this number. It's just the number of incoming things. And so the only one that's left is if we have a pentagon with 3 pentagons coming together, that's 2 edges equals 3 vertices yet again. Are we okay with that? Does that make sense? So we just, all we did is we counted it in the most obvious way. We realized we made a mistake, we fixed our mistake, and that's it. So I think a lesson there is don't be afraid to make mistakes. Usually that's how you make progress. So that's one equation. There's another equation, though. So we have. So now I want to talk to you about equations and variables for a second. I want to think about V, E, and F as being variables. So they're, we don't know what they are. In particular examples, we saw some values for these variables, but I want to think about that they could be just anything, and we're trying to figure out what could they be. If you want to have a system of variables and you want to limit what possibilities can happen, then you need to introduce a bunch of equations that constrain those variables, that say, well, they're not all independent from one another, they're related by equations, and then this is what lets us solve them, just like when you solve a quadratic equation in your algebra class. So there's other equations. So here, we were always relating the edges to the vertices. So now, let me count the number of vertices by just counting the number of faces. So I'm going to count the number of vertices on one of our guys. I'll do a tetrahedron again just because it's the only one I can draw. So I'm going to count the number of vertices by saying, well, this face is connected to 3 vertices. This face is connected to 3 vertices. This face and this face. So I get that the number of vertices is equal to, well, each face is connected to 3 vertices, so I get 3 times the number of faces. That's my equation that I get there. And did I do that right? No, I made a mistake. I made the same mistake as last time, and how do I fix it? So each face is connected to 3 vertices, but each vertex is connected to how many faces? 3. So then what do I need to put right here?
3.
I need to put 3. We put 2 here because edges were only connected to 2 vertices. But the relationship between vertices and faces is more interesting. So we have this equation. Okay, so help me go down the list now. So how about triangles but with 4 coming together? 3V equals 4F. That's right. Let me double check that. So triangles, but with 4 coming together. So it's still true that each face is connected to, I think we did it wrong, guys. 4V equals 3F. Because, see, each face is connected to 3 vertices, so that's our first attempt at counting. But then we realize that each vertex is connected to 4 faces. So when we put the correction, it has to be over here. Okay. And then how about squares coming together 3 at a time? So now how many vertices is each square connected to? How many vertices does each square connect to? Yep. 4, good. So we want to count the number of vertices by counting the number of faces. We have 4F. But then each of those vertices is connected to three faces. Okay, so let me just go ahead and fill out the rest of this here. So the pattern is what? The right-hand side is always the number of sides. So we have 3F equals 5V. And we have, let's see, so now 5F equals 3V. Okay. All right, well, this is pretty good, but we need to keep going because we had three variables and we only have two equations. That's not going to cut it. If you have three variables and two equations, you're not going to be able to solve that, right? Like if you have one variable and no equations, you're out of luck. If you have two variables and only one equation, you're still out of luck. So you need to have as many equations as you have variables. So we're going to need to come up with another equation. Does anybody have any ideas where we might come up with one? Yep. Okay, good. Yeah, so a perfectly reasonable thing to do is compare edges to faces. So we compare edges to vertices, vertices to faces, and now let's do edges to faces. Okay. So each face is connected to how many edges? Two, right? Because, each edge, I apologize, each edge is connected to how many faces? Two, because there's the one on the left and there's the one on the right. Good. So that means that if we only count the edges, then we're going to get twice the number of faces. But then we have to compensate for the fact that each face is connected to some number of edges, right? So here, down this list, we have to write just the same numbers that we wrote here. So I'll just fill this out. So this is always 2e, 2e, 2e. E, 2E. Okay, and then here we have the same numbers for the same reason. Each face is connected to a certain number of edges. That number of edges is the same number as the number of vertices. So 3F, 4F, 3F, and 5F. Okay, so we should be in the clear now because we have three variables that we want to solve and we have three equations for them. But we're not in the clear. Does anybody see any kind of problems with the three equations that we wrote down? This is a pretty subtle issue, yeah?
If you have no information for any variable, you can't.
Yeah, if we had, see, the thing is, if we had, say we knew what the number of edges was, the problem is that, Well, let me not spell it out. Yeah, you're on the right track. Let's keep looking at these. Let's look at just these three equations along the top here. Let's just focus our attention on these three equations. Okay, so the outer equation says that 2e equals 3v, the first equation. The third equation says that 2e equals 3f. So if you combine the two outer equations together, what do you determine? If you combine this equation here with this equation here, do you see a new equation? Yeah, exactly. So if you combine this equation with this equation, you see 3v equals 2e, but then 2e equals 3f. And so the new equation that we got, 3v equals 3f, is actually not a new equation because it's already the equation we had. We already had 3v equals 3f. Just by combining those two equations. And so this new equation that we wrote in the middle here, turns out it's garbage. It is true, but it doesn't help us solve the problem. Let's keep going. So 4v equals 2e, and 2e equals 3f. So that tells us already, just from these two equations, it tells us that 4v equals 3f. And that gets rid of this equation. So in fact, the equations down the middle, it turns out, this is what's called dependent. This equation in the middle is dependent on the other two equations, and it's not going to let us solve the problem. So what we need to do is we need to have a new idea. We need to have a new idea, and the only way that I ever come up with new ideas is by looking at examples. So we have a bunch of examples of vertices, edges, and faces. And the only way that we could win this game is if we had another equation that we haven't figured out between vertices, edges, and faces. Now, if you happen to know the equation I have in mind, please don't blurt it out. But if you have some inkling of some equation. So try to just look for some patterns in this table of numbers. Let's spend a good solid 5 minutes just seeing if there's some equation between V, E, and F that holds in every single example. Okay, so an example of an equation which holds in the first case, but maybe not in the other ones, is, well, I could say that, here's a really dumb one. I could say that V plus E plus F equals 14. Is that true? V plus E plus F equals 14? It's certainly true in the first case, right? 4 plus 6 plus 4 equals 14, but it's not true anymore on this case. Yeah, but that's the equation that I kind of want to look for. I want some simple relation between V, E, and F, some new equation. Do you have already some idea? So how did you come to that equation? You looked at the chart, yeah? So the observation is that V plus F is 8. If you subtract 2, you get 6. 6 plus 6 is 12. If you subtract 2, you get 10. 5 plus 6 is 11. If you subtract 2, you get 9. 8 plus 6 is 14. If you subtract 2, you get 12. And so this is, I'm going to establish this as a conjecture. And what's your name again?
Ilya.
Delia, can you spell it? So a conjecture which is due to Delia and also Leonhard Euler in, I believe, the 1600s or so, is that if we take the number of vertices and we add to that the number of faces, that this is equal to the number of edges plus 2. Okay? So this is a very famous equation. It's called Euler's equation, and it is true. And what I want to do with the rest of our time is, first of all, so this is a conjecture. So in mathematics, there's sort of three levels. So the first level in mathematics is complete confusion, and that's where we started today. And then there's actually four layers. So the first is complete confusion. Then you have incorrect conjectures, and we made a big one. We said that there were infinitely many of these. And then you have a correct conjecture, which is this one. And then if you can prove that, then you have a proof. And a proof is, it's almost an essay about the topic that you're thinking about. It's not some homework problem that you just work and you just do it. A proof is an explanation to a younger person who hasn't seen this of why what you're saying is true. Okay, so that's what we're going to try to do a little bit later on, and maybe I'll email some suggestions if you want to work on it at home. But what I'd like to do right now, even once you have a conjecture, if you think it's correct, you can try to apply that conjecture. So let's assume that this conjecture is correct, and let's see what it gives us. Okay. So let's look at the case where we had all triangles coming together, and three of them came together at a vertex. And let's see what our equations tell us. So let's see. So we have, so it was already observed that 3V equals 3F. We can simplify that to say that V equals F. Okay, so that's good. And now let's see. So 2E equals 3V. We have that one. 2E equals 3V. And then we finally have this new one, V plus F equals E plus 2. So let's see about manipulating these two equations here. So since V equals F, let me forget about V. Let me just, every time I see a V, let me replace it with F. So I'm going to eliminate this equation, and I'm just, every time I see a V, I'm going to replace it with an F. So now this equation, 2E equals 3V, becomes 2E equals 3F. Now this equation, V plus F, that becomes 2F. And now 2E equals 3F. So let me multiply this equation, this whole equation by 2, both sides of this equation by 2. So if I do that, then I get 4F equals 2E plus 4. Do you see what I did? I went from this equation to this one just by multiplying both sides by 2. And here, I eliminated F. I eliminated V, excuse me. Okay? So I eliminated V, and then I multiplied this equation by 2. Now I have 4F equals 2E plus 4, but 2E equals 3F. So now I'm in a favorable position to eliminate E as well. So now I can rewrite this. How would I rewrite the last equation as to get rid of E? What could I do? So I have 4F equals 2E plus 4, and I also know that 2E equals 3F. So what should I do, Ada?
4F equals 3F plus
4. Very good. So 2E is just the same as 3F. That's what this equation is saying. So anywhere I see a 2E in my computation, I can just replace it with a 3F. So that's exactly what Anna is saying. So this 2E I can replace with a 3F plus 4. And now I have 4F equals 3F, so I can subtract my 3F over. So I subtract 3F from both sides, and I'm left with F equals 4. Okay. So what does that tell us? Why is that an interesting number? Why is it interesting that we got F equals 4? By the way, if F equals 4, before you answer that question, if F equals 4, what does V equal? 4. And if F equals 4, what does E equal?
6.
You guys see that? Because 4 times 3 is 12. And then half of that is 6. So what we saw is that just by studying these equations, these simple equations that we got that F equals 4, V equals 4, and E equals 6. Now you guys recognize this, right? What does that have to do with what I've been doing? It's the tetrahedron, right? So it is the tetrahedron, and that is everything there is to know about the tetrahedron. You know what its faces look like. You know how many edges it has. You know how many vertices it has. And in particular, the thing I want to point out is we didn't get F equals 4 or maybe 6 or maybe 20. We just got F equals 4. So there was just one way to arrive at the tetrahedron, and it's just like that. Now, I hope you believe me, and some of you may like to do it as an exercise, that the same computation that I just did here, at each case, it's going to let you precisely solve the number of faces. You're just going to do this arithmetic that I was doing here. You're going to precisely solve the number of faces, therefore the number of edges, and therefore the number of vertices, and you're going to find one number. An exercise that I'll leave to you is, without building it, don't go and build it, but just solve the equations and figure out how many vertices, edges, and faces are in the icosahedron. So in this case here. So an exercise for you guys to... did I do that right? Oh, no. Yeah, thank you. I see an observant person in the audience. That's a dodecahedron. For the icosahedron, this one, okay, I want you to figure out how many faces it has, how many vertices it has, and how many edges it has, and I don't want you to look in a Latin dictionary. Okay? Very good. So, all right, so that's the main thing that I wanted to talk to you guys about today, but we have a little bit of extra time, and there's a topic that I'd hope to get to. I think we'll put aside proving Euler's conjecture for today. I would like those interested in this conjecture to try and work this out. And what I suggest doing is starting with really simple examples. So for the tetrahedron, you can just check that the equation is true. The tetrahedron is just one example, and this is an equation, and we can just check that it's true. And then the thing that I'd like you to do is I'd like you to imagine building from the tetrahedron more complicated shapes. So maybe you start with the tetrahedron, and you just add a little vertex in here. Okay. So now you have a new shape. It's not a tetrahedron anymore because now it has some new edges, and it also has some new vertices. But For instance, in this example, what did we do? We added one new vertex, but we also added one new edge. So if the equation was true before we drew this green dot, then when we draw this green dot, we just increase both sides of the equation by one, and it's still true. Okay? Or you could instead think about not drawing a new vertex on an edge, but drawing a new vertex right in the middle of one of your faces. So this is something called... this has a technical name called barycentric subdivision. And all it means is taking one of your faces and breaking it up into smaller faces. So if I'm going to put that vertex there, then what had I better also add in for it to make sense? Yeah, I have to add in some rods connecting it. And so when I added in those rods, I added one new vertex, but I also added in three edges, and I also added in two faces, because I had one face, and now I turned it into three faces. So if you think about that, if you argue very carefully about how can you take something, the simplest example you know, and build new examples out of it, you're going to find that this equation is true no matter how complicated the shape is. Okay, so that's a sketch of the proof, and I think it's a really useful example to try to work through it. But I want to spend the remaining bit of time I have until noon, is that right? Yeah, okay. So I want to spend the remaining bit of time talking a little bit more seriously about this word symmetry that we used. So we came up with a definition at the beginning of a class, which was a very, very good definition to my mind, and it let us solve our problem. But several of you pointed out that there are other interesting notions of symmetry than the sort of one that we started with, and I want to just have a few minutes to say some words about those. So I want to share. Well, before I share this one example that I like, let me say that so I want to introduce a definition. Can you guys see this? Is it below the screen? Okay, so a symmetry group okay, I'm not going to give a complete definition, but I want to give you the idea. A symmetry group of a shape, let's call our shape S. So S could be the tetrahedron, or it could be this funny guy, or any of these shapes. The symmetry group is all allowable reorderings of the vertices. Okay. That sounds like a kind of a silly definition, or maybe not silly, but not very clear. So let me try to spell out what I mean. So by a reordering, I mean, say, for the tetrahedron. So for the tetrahedron, its vertices, I'm going to call 1, 2, 3, and 4. Okay. Now, a symmetry of this tetrahedron is going to be where I grab it and I rotate it in a certain way so that 1 goes to some other vertex, I don't say which one. 2 goes to some other vertex, I don't say which one. 3 goes to some other vertex, but where I move it rigidly. I'm not going to stretch it out, I'm not going to break it, I'm not going to cut it in half. I'm just going to grab it and I'm going to move it rigidly. Okay. So let's, for example, let's work out what the symmetry group of this this thing is. So let's list all symmetries. Okay, so let me ask you a question. If I start with the vertex 1 and I want to tell you where to map it to under one of these rotations, which vertices am I going to be allowed to map 1 to so that this thing still fits back inside itself? What's that? That's right. So I can map 1, can go to itself, I could do nothing, it could go to 2, it could go to 3, or it could go to 4. Okay, that's right. There's no real problem so far with mapping the first one. So now, say I've mapped 1 to 2. So let's say I've mapped 1 to 2. Now, so that means that the 1 went here. Where can I map 2 to? Can I map 2 back to 1 to itself? No, I can't. Why not? I heard a lot of good murmurs, but I didn't hear anything loud enough. Yeah, so, see, the thing about the kinds of things I want, I'm asking that I don't smush the thing. I don't want to destroy the thing. And since one already went to two, then two certainly can't stay put. It has to get out of the way for one. So two can go to, what are the possibilities for two to go to if one goes to two?
Three.
It could go to three. Could it go to four? I'm hearing no. Do I hear any yeses? Let's see. So this is kind of a trick question, because it turns out for the tetrahedron that you can map any vertex to any other vertex, and in fact, you can do any reordering that you want. So see, we said 1 goes to 2, so that means I have to do this. Now, keep in mind, this is 2, so we got to keep our eye on 2 here. I'm not doing a magic trick. So if 1 goes to 2, now 2 is here. It can go either to 3, which is where I did it, or it could swing around here and go to back to 1, or it could swing around back and go to 4. So it turns out that even if you fix that 1 goes to 2, the only constraint you have on where 2 could go is the obvious thing. So in fact, 2 can go to 3, 4, or 1. Okay? Now, suppose that I sent... Okay, well, just to be... just to make our lives easier, instead of sending 1 to 2 and 2 to 3, 4, or 1, let's suppose that I send 1 to 1, so I don't do anything. And I send 2 to 2. So it looks like I'm being pretty lazy and I don't want to do anything. Is there any constraint on what I can send 3 to? So 1 stays fixed, 2 stays fixed. So where are the possibilities that 3 could go? 4 or itself. Certainly we could just do nothing. We could be completely lazy and 3 could stay still. Or we could try to send 3 to 4. So I ask you a question, which actually has, it's a yes or no question that has two answers. Can I send 3 to 4? So the answer to this question depends on how you ask it. So if I fix 1 stays put and 2 stays put, then you see, the only thing that I can do is I can rotate around that axis, and then as I come back, it turns out that 3 always gets stuck at 3 and 4 always gets stuck at 4. So it turns out that in one way of looking at it, you can't, you actually can't map 3 to 4. On the other hand, maybe I shouldn't only allow sort of rigid movements like that. Maybe I should also allow reflections. So if I allow reflections, then I can keep 1 and 2 fixed, and I can put a mirror right down the middle of 1 and 2, and then that mirror is going to switch 3 and 4. So in fact, those of you who answered no were correct. Those of you who answered yes were correct. But I think it's going to be most interesting to allow the yes. So I want to allow things where we add in a mirror and we're allowed to switch two guys. But notice that even when we switch them, we still want it to be rigid. I mean, even when you put through the mirror, it still looks like a tetrahedron when you come out. It doesn't get all skewed. Okay, so it turns out that we can map the tuple 1, 2, 3, 4 can get mapped to any other tuple. Let me write it I1. I2, I3, or I4. Okay, so what this just means is that 1 can go to any I1, 2 can go to any I2. There's only one condition on I1, I2, I3, and I4. What is the condition? We said at the beginning, you don't want to smush this thing. So what does not wanting to smush it mean? If you think about it, it means that I1 had better never equal I2, or never equal I3, or never equal I4. Okay, so it turns out that we can do any of those that we want, as long as 1, 2, 3, 4 gets mapped, say, to 4, 1, 2, 3, or 4, 2, 1, 3, or any, these are called permutations of the numbers 1 through 4, any permutation is allowed. So let me ask you a question. What is the size of the symmetry group? So we said a symmetry group is all the possible reorderings, and here we listed all the possible reorderings. So let me ask you, what is the size? How many possible symmetries are there? Are there infinitely many? Are there finitely many? Are there 2? Are there 6? What is it? I'm not going to answer that one. I'm going to wait for you guys. Guesses are good. I heard a guess of 6 from, where did I hear that from? 6? Okay, I heard a guess of 6 and I heard a guess of 24. So I want to know where both of those guesses came from. Walk me through your thinking on 6.
Uh-huh.
Oh, very good. So, what's your name?
Kevin.
So what Kevin said is that there's actually a what's called a subgroup of size 6 inside the total symmetry group. Let me call my symmetry group G. There's a subgroup of size 6, and this is a very interesting subgroup. So what Kevin said is, look, take any of your edges, face it straight towards you, put a mirror there, and then you've got a little switch. And then he said, since you've got 6 edges, then you've got 6 little possible mirrors that you can do. And indeed, that's going to give you a subgroup inside of G. But it's not all. There's actually some more. So that's good. I heard a 24. Where did I hear that from? Okay, so what's your thinking on 24? Okay. So 24 is 4 factorial, which we write as 4! 4 exclamation mark, which means 4 times 3 times 2 times 1. And indeed, that is correct. And the point is that we can think about this number 4 times 3 times 2 times 1 as we say, just the way we did it before. We say, well, 1, you've got 4 choices where to send it. So you can send 1 to either 1, 2, 3, or 4. So you've got 4 choices. Now, 2... you can send to anything you want except for the very thing that you just sent 1 to. So you've got 3 choices for 2. Now 3, you've only got 2 choices left. And then by the time you get to 4, there are no more choice. So 4 times 3 times 2 times 1. So indeed, 24 is the size of the symmetry group of the tetrahedron. 24 is the size of G. Okay, I've just got a few minutes. What I wanted to show you is a really neat example to set up this example, I need to go back to the octahedron here. So I want to think really quickly about what is the symmetry group for the octahedron. Okay, so the octahedron... Okay, so we can get started the same way we did with the tetrahedron, but we're going to find it's a little more subtle. So let's take our favorite vertex, say at the top here. Which vertices are we allowed to map to? Which vertex can we map that vertex to under a rigid motion? We can map this one, in fact, to any of the other ones. Because, in fact, that's our definition of being completely symmetric, is that every vertex looks just like every other vertex. So I can take this 4, this guy up top, I could map him certainly to the bottom, but I could also map him here, 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 or here. Or I could leave him fixed. So what is the total number of ways, the total number of places where I could send that first vertex to? 5 including itself, so let's write 6. So, because we actually really do care about the thing where we do nothing. So there are 6 ways to map our top guy. Okay, here's where it gets a little bit more subtle with the octahedron. If we map this, say we did nothing to this. Say we did nothing to this. Say we decided to be lazy and leave that one fixed. Then how many places could we map this one to? Say we kept this one fixed. How many ways can we map this one?
5.
Okay, I heard a 5. Do I hear any other answers? I hear a 4. Okay, so I want the 5s and the 4s to duke it out. Why 5? It's a natural reason to say 5. Why 5? Yeah, so 1 is already occupied, and so we should be able to map this one to any of the 5 remaining ones. That's reasonable. But now, why 4? Yep. Very good. So, you see this one here, our motion has to be rigid. And so, in particular, if this one is stuck here, then this one can only map to something which is the same distance away. So we're not allowed to just take this one and stretch it down here, because that would totally mess up our thing. Imagine if you did that with rods and balls, your thing would just come apart. So that's the kind of thing we need to avoid. So in fact, once you fix this guy to stay put, then there's only four ways to map the bottom one. So it turns out that there's... It turns out that that same argument applies even if we hadn't made it stay put. No matter where we had moved it, the same argument applies. So there's four ways to map the next guy. Okay? So now, let's suppose that we keep both of these two fixed. Then, are there any more choices left? I'm seeing some no's. Do I see any yeses? Or all no's? So this is, again, that same question. It has both two correct answers. One is yes and one is no. If we're allowing only rigid motions, then there's nothing else we can do. If we fix these two, then the only thing we can do is rotate around their axis, and then it turns out that that's always going to fix all these. If we allow reflections through a plane splitting this in half, then we could switch, say, this, the one in the back, could get switched with the one in the front. So we get one more choice here. So the size of that symmetry group, it turns out, is 6 times 4 times 2, which is 48. Okay, so when we were talking about these things being highly symmetric, another way that we could have defined highly symmetric is that this symmetry group that we're computing and these numbers that we're computing are as big as possible. So there's so you could imagine all shapes that have, say, four triangles on them, and you could ask for which of these shapes have the biggest symmetry group possible. And it turns out that that gives you an equivalent notion, which is a very useful notion of symmetry. And so I just want to close by showing you, by illustrating that example with this very nice one that, what was your name that brought this to me? Kyera, and your brother? You made this with your brother? Okay, Ross, you said?
In Ross,
okay, great. So this one that they built, see, they thought a little bit outside the box here. This is like the octahedron that we drew here, but what they did is they made these edges double lengths, okay? And so if I were to remove one of these extra edges, this thing would just collapse and be a symmetric octahedron. And so what they did is this really neat thing called symmetry breaking. They took something which was symmetric, and they just tweaked it ever so slightly to give you something non-symmetric. And if you think about what happens when we run our analysis here, say if we keep our... So for instance, now this top one... How many places can I map the top one to in this shape? I claim that I can only map it to two places, because you see, this rectangle here is stuck here. So this guy has the property that all of its edges, it has four edges coming out just like all the other ones, but all of its edges are the same length. And there's only one other vertex that has that property, which is the bottom one. So in fact, if I have to do a rigid symmetry, I can only permute these two guys. And so there's only two possibilities here. And then and once I fix these two, then the only possible things I can do is I can rotate the rectangle, or I can do a reflection. Okay, so what turns out is when you did that thing, a very innocent thing of lengthening this, then you did something really interesting, which is you reduced the symmetry group, and you reduced it by a factor of 6. So I believe that the new symmetry group has order 8 or 12. It's either 8 or 24. Okay, let's think. So we have two possible ways to send the top and bottom. Then we have the rotations, 1, 2, and then we have the reflections, so it's 8. So they reduce the symmetry group by a factor of 6 simply by lengthening these lengths. And so when you have something very symmetric, you realize that it's very, very unstable. As soon as you change it ever so slightly, the symmetry group breaks down, and so this is an interesting example of that. And I'm 5 minutes over time, so I'll stop. Thank you very much.
Thank you.